forward, would you, judges? Next case is number 07-1014, Amgen Incorporated, the International Trade Commission, and the Roche Company, as interveners. Are you ready, Mrs. Sackler-Baxter?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the Court. At the crux of Amgen's appeal is the application of 271E1. First, with respect to Amgen's process claims, whether the exemption should apply at all, given that Roche manufactures and uses Amgen's process abroad. And second, with respect to Amgen's product claims, what record must be had before a determination of the exemption's application can be made. Regarding first to Amgen's process claims, Section 271E1's language is very clear on its face. Within the United States, 271E1 exempts from liability the acts of making and using, offering for sale, sale, and selling products. Outside the United States, it only exempts the patented invention that has been imported. Clearly, practice of a process is not being imported when Roche practices the process for making Evo outside the United States and imports a pegylated Evo product into the United States. And so, to the extent that Roche practices the process outside the United States, which it does, 271E1's exemption just does not apply according to the statute's language. Regarding Amgen's process...
Is it your position then that the research exemption under 271E doesn't apply at all in 337 proceedings with respect to products produced abroad by a process covered by a U.S. patent?
Yes. It is that. That is our position.
And how are you explaining the fact that the statute for 337 actions refer to infringement?
Well,
this is a question, again, of infringement within the United States, which, again, brings us back into 271. What are we getting around that?
Well, 337 has, A1B has two components, subsection 1 and subsection 2. Subsection 1 talks about infringement. Subsection 2 talks about the making of a product using a process covered by a patent. It doesn't actually speak to infringement itself. And so 337 in some ways actually supports that processes are treated differently under the exemption than products themselves. Comparing again 337A1B1, which clearly says infringes, versus B2, which clearly says covered by a patent. Without respect to infringement.
But 271 was clearly intended to immunize pre-marketing activities that would otherwise be patent infringement.
That's correct, but I think that according to the 271E1's clear language, it is directed to immunizing activities within the United States. And should an infringer, an alleged infringer, decide to practice its process outside the United States, their importation of the product itself would be protected, but the practice of the process would not. Regarding Amgen's product claims, which are slightly different, the issue here is that Amgen was denied the discovery to which it was entitled. This denied Amgen the right to fully have a question of fact whether Roche's activities were reasonably related to the obtaining of FDA approval, decided on a full record. Roche did this by filing a motion for protective order prior to the beginning of discovery, deposition discovery. And after that point, either refused to have its witnesses answer questions on the basis of the ITC not having jurisdiction to hear cases of imminent importation in violation of 337. Or simply not by not producing witnesses that could answer questions. Notwithstanding.
But procedural issues are entitled, decisions are entitled to great deference.
That's correct.
And especially commission and fact questions are entitled to substantial evidence deference.
Yes.
And the commission found, the OJ found, that all the activities were preclinical or clinical related. was not related to marketing.
Well, the ALJ and the ITC decided that on the record that it had before it. Our contention is that the record before the ITC was incomplete and the decision was premature. Unlike, for example, the case in Merck, where there was a full trial. Here, there was a summary discovery schedule set together by both parties. It assumed that Roche would be forthcoming with the information that Amgen was seeking. In fact, because of this pending motion for protective order, which was eventually denied, but unfortunately denied after the fact, after discovery closed, Amgen, when asking questions of its witness, of Roche's witnesses, was not allowed to hear any answers. For other witnesses that were provided, these witnesses did not know the answers and pointed to witnesses that were not provided.
You realize the steep curve you're trying to mount.
With respect,
you've done research and found how often this court has reversed procedural determinations of voter tracking.
Very infrequently, Your Honor. But I guess that question is directed towards Amgen's product claims, and that burden is directed towards Amgen's product claims. With respect to Amgen's process claims, going back to my first argument, it's one of statutory construction that this court can consider.
Talk about the product claims.
Okay. And so you are right. There is an abuse of discretion standard by which we have to overturn the product claim decision.
With respect to the product claims, it's your position that things have now moved beyond preclinical and clinical studies to the point where there's now some marketing or soon to be marketing activity. Is there anything that prevents you from filing a new proceeding?
Well, there's nothing that actually prevents us from filing a new proceeding, but until these questions of 271E1's applicability, whether to the process claims themselves, or whether to the amount of discovery that Amgen is entitled to, is decided.
With respect to the product claims, if you think things have now progressed so that the facts are different from the facts that were before the commission in this case, I gather there's nothing that would prevent you from filing a new action asserting that those product claims now present an unfair act.
There would be nothing that prevents us from refiling the case. The issue, again, is just to the extent and to what degree Amgen is allowed discovery for actions beyond 271E1. And also, although there was discovery in the related district court action, that discovery was regarding was under a protective order that may or may not apply, and we may or may not be able to use that discovery in refiling the suit. And so we would be left in the same situation.
Was that an issue at all? As I recall, your concern was what you called imminent infringement, that there was no of sale, of an actual sale, and that issue didn't get that far. Perhaps it hasn't yet?
Well, there are two issues by which Amgen could prevail. The first is whether Roche has already stepped outside the bounds of 271E1's exemption. And we believe, with this newly discovered evidence, that it has.
But that would involve both the product and the process,
yes.
Not if, in fact, there is an immunity.
Yes. But there is also a second prong of Amgen's claims under 337, which is for imminent importation in violation of Section 337. And so even if there is no actual violation, infringement of Amgen's patents that falls outside of 271E1, there is a separate claim for imminent importation in violation of 337. I'm not sure if I answered your question or not.
Yes, well, I think that's really a very interesting aspect if, in fact, the process is being practiced overseas. And when the product thereof gets here, there is an immunity because of 271E1. What that means as far as the process is concerned, but that's a theory, a hypothetical question that even if you cited according to your theory, it would not bar the importation.
If there is, I'm trying to understand your question, if there is no violation if there's no patent infringement under 271E, there could still be liability.
Let's assume that the process as practiced overseas is in fact a patented process.
Mm-hmm. So then there would be, in our belief, an actual infringement that's taking place today, because 271E1 does not protect the importation, the use of that process abroad, if that product is imported into the United States. But with regard to our profit claims, and I interrupted, so I apologize.
Whereas if in fact the process were practiced in the United States, it would be immune under just the current theory or one reading of the Integra case.
That's correct. And
so you say the research exemption may be an exemption from infringement, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there is not an unfair act under 337.
It would depend on whether you're talking about the process claims or the
process
product claims. For the process claims, we say the research exemption just does not apply, and there is a violation under 337 because of that, because of an infringement, but also under B2 because of the imminent importation in violation of 337.
Right. Let's save the rest of your time.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Sheffield. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. One of Justice Lynn's statements earlier was directly on point. There's nothing that, even after this case is decided, that would stop Amgen from filing this case again at the Commission after they've shown an actual non-exempt sale or an importation that would not fit within 271E1. What Amgen is actually asking the Commission to do, and they may not, is for declaratory judgment on actions that have not and may never occur. The Commission simply does not have declaratory judgment authority. That comes for district, unlike district courts, which do, the Commission does not.
You're talking about imminent infringement.
Over imminent infringement.
Imminent infringement.
Over the activities, the so-called marketing activities.
What about the linguistic distinction that your opponent has made regarding 271E1 and 337?
I think to a certain extent, it's a turning argument. It's been long known that this court and commission has utilized Section 35 of the Patent Act and the Applied Patent Act to actions before the commission. And 337C states that all defenses in the all defenses legal and equitable are available before the commission. 337C stating all defenses legal and equitable would include 271E1. Whenever Congress intended for a defense not to be available before the commission, they specifically stated so, as in the case of 271G. So in the absence of any direct statement by Congress to the contrary, defenses are available. As for the fact that the commission's jurisdiction says unfair acts, it doesn't say specifically infringement, it's more of a jurisdictional issue for the importation. It's quite clear that we follow the Title 35 and the Patent Act and we're talking about infringement. As the Andrew's counsel pointed to, there are actually two points here, two separate distinct points. The imminent infringement acts, things that haven't happened, the so-called marketing activities, and the separate portion are the importations that actually did take place. It's very important to keep
those. Let's bend back to what you said before. Mm-hmm. 271A. Talks about a patented invention, importing a patented invention. You don't import a process. But what you're saying is that 271E1, which also talks about a patented invention, applies to 337.
Yes. Basically, Andrew's argument would mean that, as you said, that any process that's patented in the United States practiced abroad and then ported to the United States. And that would include both 271G and 337A1B2 would not be able to enjoy the exemption of 271E1.
In other words, there'd be a big hole in the statute.
There would be a big hole in the statute. Congressional intent was clearly...
Sometimes Congress leaves holes.
Sometimes Congress does leave holes, but in this case, they didn't leave a hole.
Sometimes Congress leaves ambiguities for courts to resolve.
Yes, but in this case, there was no ambiguity. Congress specifically stated in the legislative history of 271G, which put forth the patent, Process Patent Amendment Act, the exact words were, Congress does not intend that it shall be an act of infringement to import a product which is made by a process patented in the United States solely for uses regionally related to the development and submission of information under federal law which regulates the manufacture, use, or sale of a drug. I would submit that's not ambiguous. It specifically says, and then Congress specifically cited to 271E1. So Congress not only intended, but Congress specifically addressed and said that 271E1 applies to the products of patents practiced abroad.
Ms. Shepard, I'd like to sort of take you back a little bit and go through a little bit of a timeline here. My understanding is in 1940, Section 1337A was passed, and that act made clear that the importation of a product made by a process covered by a U.S. patent abroad constituted an unfair act.
Correct.
Now, it was not an infringement penalty because that was long prior to 271G. So, in 1940, infringement was making, using, selling in the United States, etc., etc. But the making, using, selling of a product made by a process covered by a process patent was not an act of infringement. So you have from 1940 all the way up until 1988 when 271G was passed, the situation where the importation of a product made by a process was not an act of infringement, but was an unfair act under 37. Am I correct so far?
You're correct so far, but I would assert that unfair act really, the unfair act was the importation of a product that was infringed.
Well, that's not what the statute said. It's the importation of a product covered by the claims of an unexpired valid patent. The statute does not use infringement. This is 337 I'm talking about. It says covered by the claims of a patent. Then in 1984, Section 271E is passed, this is the Hatch-Waxman Act, and that act says it shall not be an infringement. Get to the exact language of that act. It shall not be an act of infringement to make, use, offer to sell, or sell within the United States or import into the United States a patented invention. It did not say it shall not be an unfair act under 337.
Correct.
So my question is, prior to the passage of 271G, did 271E provide a research exemption to the unfair act of importing a product made by a process under 337?
To my knowledge, that was never tested before the commission. But
is there any language in any statute that would provide a research exemption to the unfair act? This is prior to the passage of 271G.
Or prior to the passage of 271E1 even, or just prior to the passage of 271?
When 271E was passed, that was a research exemption, clearly a research exemption from acts of infringement for research and for clinical, preclinical studies. But my question is, did 271E provide a research exemption for unfair acts as specified in 337, given the language of the statute that says an unfair act is the importation of a product covered by a patent? Doesn't say infringing, covered by.
Well, this court dealt with the language of covered by in a previous case between Amgen and the ITC. And in that case, this court decided that covered by was supposed to incorporate the Patent Act. And in 337C, the defenses that we're talking about are in the Patent Act. They're in Title 37.
In other words, is
337 defining what are otherwise equivalent to acts of patent infringement?
Yes.
And hence 271E1 came in and exempted all of that under the specified conditions.
Correct. As you said earlier, Congress was not intending to create a loophole. I'm out of time. I'm going to turn over in a second. Congress was not intending to create a loophole.
We'll create a loophole for you to finish.
Thank you. A loophole where an infringer would be able to basically offshore and be able to take its operation offshore and then get around the safe harbor exemption that they intended by putting through 271E1. In cases where Congress has wanted to create a loophole, like in 271G, they were specific. I would suggest that the case law here has always said that we follow, the Commission follows the Patent Act, and that includes the exemptions and defenses.
So the thrust of the Commission's argument is that 337 now, when it says acts of infringement, or whether it's unfair competition or some other, is subordinated to the direction of the law under 271E1. That it doesn't matter where the product comes from, if once it gets to the United States, it's used solely for federal registration.
Yes, and we believe that the Congress is quite clear, and the statute is quite clear, as long as it's reasonably related to FDA approval or federal regulatory process, it can be imported. It may be exempt under 271E1. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but answering your question.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's hear from Mr. Garrity.
May it please the Court, Michael Zaharty on behalf of Roche. Your Honors, I heard Amgen's counsel spend a lot of time complaining about the lack of discovery in this case.
Let's get directly to the point that we're concerned with. I didn't hear them say, other than the question of marketing timing, that they were injured. They did complain about, I do believe, but not knowing whether there was actual infringement or only intentional infringement. Was there any question at all as to what the product was used for when imported?
No, on this record there is no question at all. We submitted supplemental interrogatory responses which laid out in painstaking detail every importation, shipment by shipment, invoice by invoice, and those same responses laid out in extreme detail everything that was done with all of that accused material.
Are those fact questions, fact determinations?
There was absolutely no contrary evidence. The judge, in this case, required us to go the extra mile. He said that he was not going to grant Amgen's motion for summary determination unless we accounted for every single, in his words, every bit of product that was imported into the United States up through June 16, 2006. That every bit language is not my own. That was the judge's own language from his order number 5. And we did that. We submitted those supplemental interrogatory responses as the same responses that are before the court now. And the judge saw exactly what you see, that there is no evidence of any infringing use, that every use on the record has been documented and was strictly for FDA purposes. Amgen has complained about other discovery issues, but as we show in great detail in our brief, especially at pages 32 through 36 of the green brief, that Amgen either received full discovery on all of those issues or that discovery was immaterial to any issue raised in this action. For example, they talk about not receiving adequate discovery regarding a full accounting of accused material. Well, as I just explained a second ago, we did provide a complete accounting of all the uses and all the importations of the accused material. The other subjects upon which they claim that they did not get adequate discovery were subjects that are simply immaterial to any issue raised by this appeal. For example, they complained in their brief that we didn't give them discovery about our plans, schedules, and budgets for FDA approval and for commercial launch. None of that can constitute an act of infringement. None of that can constitute a making, using, or selling of a patented invention.
No, but if indeed the defense, and the only defense, is that all of these otherwise infringing, or actually infringing, activities are immunized because the product of the process is being used only for purposes of federal registration, surely they are entitled to a reasonable assurance that that defense was supportable.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I agree with that. And they were. They received an accounting, in Judge Loughran's words, of every single bit of the accused material. They took the depositions of 17 individuals for over 100 hours of testimony and received hundreds of thousands of documents. And after all that discovery, they can come back with nothing that even raises a genuine issue of fact as to whether any of our uses were for anything other than FDA approval.
And so the day that approval is obtained, has it been obtained or is that still pending?
It's my understanding that it has not been obtained yet.
So the day it's been obtained, there will be another lawsuit, I suppose.
I can only speculate on that, Your Honor. With respect to the question that you raised about whether approval has been obtained, I would like to make the point that this whole issue of imminent infringement has been a moving target throughout this litigation. Amgen told the ITC and Judge Loughran that there was going to be approval and infringement in February of 2007. In their main briefs to this court, they said that there would be approval and infringement in the first half of 2007. It's now August of 2007, and there's still no approval. And I submit that all of this just goes to show that Amgen is simply trying to misuse Section 337 in an effort to keep surveillance over Roche and to harass Roche while Roche is attempting to get FDA approval. And in the absence of...
We have to speculate as to motivation. I think the objectivity will suffice.
Yes.
Is it your view that if we accept the Commission's determination that all the information was preclinical and clinical use, and 271E applies to 337 cases, we don't have to deal with the question of imminent infringement?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's correct. You don't. I think it's clear that
the item that was there was exempt.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think it's also clear, and we explain this in great detail in our briefs, that the Commission does not have jurisdiction over imminent infringement. But if you accept our view that everything that we're doing is for FDA purposes, yes, then I agree, you probably don't even have to address that issue.
I can imagine a situation in which, let's say by definition, an infringing product has arrived and is sitting in a free trade zone somewhere, just waiting to move out into commerce. And meanwhile, there has been this very elaborate, complicated, and expensive litigation before the ITC, that the question of imminent infringement would not really be so unrelated to the practicalities of resolving the dispute.
Well, Your Honor, I would make a distinction between the rights that a party like Amgen might have in a district court where there is declaratory judgment jurisdiction and under Section 337, which requires that there is a violation of the section before the Commission can afford any relief. And this court so held in the Enercon case.
Mr. Murray, your time has expired. Just one question I'd like to ask you, the same question I asked Ms. Shepherd, and that is that prior to the passage of 271G, did 271E provide a research exemption to unfair acts under 337?
Your Honor, honestly, I don't know in terms of a historical question, but I know that under the statutory scheme as it exists now, the 271E exemption is applicable.
You think it hadn't come up?
That's right.
But no, 271E was just 4 years before G, but it probably hadn't come up.
Yes, I agree.
But the language is different in that the 337 does not use, or at least at that time, prior to 1988, it didn't make the distinction between infringing acts and acts that are covered by. The unfair act was the importation of products made, produced by a process covered by the claims of a United States patent. And 271E says it shall not be an infringement. It did not say it shall not be an unfair act.
Your reading of the statute is, that's what the language says, Your Honor. But I would submit that 337 talks about an unfair act. And I would submit, what makes it unfair? The thing that makes it unfair has to be the act of patent infringement. And I believe that when 337 is talking about something that's covered by the claims of a U.S. patent, I think the most logical understanding of that is that they're talking about an act which is unfair. And what makes it unfair? I would submit that it's infringing someone's valid U.S. patent rights.
You know, but for decades, it was clear that it was an unfair act to import a product made by a process covered by a U.S. patent. But that was not an act of infringement. From 1940, when 337 was first passed, all the way through until 271G was passed, there was this clear distinction that you could take an action at the ITC to exclude products made by a process outside the United States, but you could not file an act of infringement. And when the exemption was implemented, it used the word infringement.
I think we will resolve this linguistic issue here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mrs. Alvarez.
I would just have a few points hopefully to cover. Regarding Mr. Doherty's statement regarding the moving target, I'd like to correct the record in that Roche at least announced publicly that it did receive an approvable letter from FDA in May of this year. And so their short of negotiation with FDA will be on the market shortly, have announced.
But what was this fixed time?
It was a, so it's
not a movable time.
It's not a, I'm sorry, it's a, he claimed it was a moving target, and I am saying that it's now a fixed target.
That's the ultimate purpose of going through all of this. The real question is, at this stage, when there is no direct literal infringement in the United States, where are we going
to go? Well, so to answer the question about whether there is direct infringement, that is a question that we believe there is direct infringement, but our complaint here today is that yes, they did give us, according to Mr. Doherty, painstaking detail on what they submitted to FDA. But by definition, what they submitted to the FDA is exempt. What we are complaining about is that they gave us no detail as to what was not submitted to FDA. And when we asked questions of witnesses about issues that would be outside the scope of what was given to FDA, those witnesses were unable to answer those questions or instructed not to answer those
questions.
The discovery issue.
But it's still the problem that accepting that there is infringement, whether it is in fact immunized.
Mm-hmm. So the issue in our briefs that I wanted to direct the attention to the court to is that there is a sale. We know that there is a transfer between the Roche entities. There are four Roche entities involved in this suit. There is a sale, according to the newly discovered evidence, between the entities. That sale includes use of product, importation of product, for Roche's non-exempt seeding trials that we also described and discovered initially in the ITC proceeding based on old documents, and which based on newly discovered evidence provides that these studies are directed to understanding whether nurses use less time in the clinic to administer product. This is clearly not an activity that would be reasonably related to obtaining FDA approval, especially where those trials are not to be completed until after the targeted date of approval. And so this is the information that we were denied access to. Regarding the application of 271E1 to Amgen's process claims, Ms. Crystal pointed out that there is no DJ jurisdiction in the ITC. We do not disagree with that, but want to point out that the ITC, as Judge Lynn has indicated, has a mandate to preclude unfair acts at its recipients and has a history of precluding those acts, even though infringement is not demonstrated. Hence the wind turbines case, which was decided in 1996 after all of these changes to the various
infringement hasn't been demonstrated, but coverage.
Coverage
is generally equivalent to infringement, except for the question of territoriality, which is what 337 deals with.
Right, and coverage is not infringement. At least there is a distinction between those two words in 337 as between B1 and B2.
Coverage is domination of an activity by a claim.
Right, and it is broader than infringement. Unless your honors have any other questions.
Any more questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard, Mr. Dyer. This is taking discussion.